This is Megan of Whole Family Rhythms, and you are listening to Melitza on Raising Playful Tots.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you could stop by today. My name is Melitza, and welcome to this play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids of ours. And also so that we can introduce a new play idea. If you're new to the show, welcome. It's good to have you here. And hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room, so come join us as we make autumn tree sculptures from a paper bag. Thanks to Valerie of innerchildfun.com for this brilliant seasonal activity. Last week's show, I shared an interview with Megan Flatt from findyourmamagroove.com about plans, dreams, effective to-do lists, and finding time to play. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. Well, this week's show, I'm excited because I am talking to Megan from Whole Family Rhythms, all about seasonal family traditions. We get a peek also into her TV-free home, and we talk about how we choose rhythms inside our homes. I really appreciate Megan being up late in Australia so that we could have this interview, especially as she shared so many great ideas. Well worth a listen. And I'm going to go and see if my sons will make the cake that she mentions. While you're listening, check out her site at wholefamilyrhythms.com. I hope you'll stick around because I think you're in for a treat. Otherwise, I'll see you again next week. Today I'm talking to Megan Wilson of Whole Family Rhythms. She began educating herself on play-based and natural early childhood learning over 4 years ago when she stumbled across some Waldorf-inspired blogs that resonated with her deeply. Since then, Megan has passionately shared her parenting journey, including her transition to a TV-free home, her parenting style and beliefs, and delicious holistic recipes on her blog, thiswholefamily.com. Welcome to the show, Megan.
Thank you.
It's lovely to have you. And I'm excited that we're going to talk about some family traditions today. What spring and autumn traditions do you have in your family?
Well, right now in Australia, it's spring and we've just kind of, the weather's just starting to warm up and we've been going on a lot of bushwalks, which is essentially the Australian word for hiking, mm-hmm. or little hikes just around our kind of urban neighborhood. And we collect flowers and, I mean, my son loves collecting rocks at the moment, so he's finding a lot of those. Sometimes we head to the beach and collect some shells. Yeah, and recently we've also had a spring festival at school, and everyone brought jasmine and ivy and other flowers and made crowns, the flower crowns, and the kids absolutely love that. And it's just kind of little things that kind of mark the change in season, as simple as starting to make ice cream or icy poles, which are like homemade popsicles. Just little things that change the season. And autumn, mm-hmm. trying to remember back, probably our biggest family tradition now, I think we're on our fourth year, we've gone apple picking, which is just so beautiful. The weather's still gorgeous in Australia in the autumn. And we fill up as many baskets as we can with apples and bring them home and then start finding as many recipes for apples that we can and cook away. And then there's other little things like making kites, and we make apple stamps, like cutting the apples up and then using them with paints and making stamps, collecting leaves, things like that, that kind of mark the autumn season.
So do you decide before the seasons happen the types of traditions that you're going to do, or do is it just evolved over time and you see whatever is around and you kind of go with the flow?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, my mom was really good at helping us kids to kind of go out into nature and collect and explore and then make art with things. And I remember a lot of our family traditions and have tried to carry those through to my kids. And then also, yeah, just kind of Googling ideas and fun activities to do and kind of observing what happens in our community and the kind of Waldorf Steiner school community. And then, yeah, creating our own traditions. And I do kind of have a few set things every season that I'd like to do. But sometimes it also just happens spontaneously. Yeah.
Oh, it's good because I remember the opposite, really. There was only a few traditions that we had in our family, and I wanted to do some with my children. Having three of them, I thought, well, it'll be really nice for us to do some things together. And I was really stuck for a while over what types of things to do. And so it was really interesting. I started to find blogs and other people that were doing other traditions, and I was like, oh, that's so neat. I want to try that, and I want to give that a go. And I just wondered how other people did it, but it sounds as if lots of people had these types of traditions in their own homes.
Yeah, I think it, we're really a mix, but my mom, yeah, was just really good. I mean, I have vivid memories of collecting leaves kind of at a little cottage home close to our city home and collecting leaves for the Thanksgiving table and ironing them with wax paper to make them all shiny, you know, little things like that. And that was only once a year, but that's, you know, one of my fondest childhood memories. So definitely these little things are what will probably stand out in the future for your kids.
And that's really important that you said that that was a small thing, but it stood out. And your mum must have taken time to do that, because usually Thanksgiving in our home is usually quite a crazy time of preparing all of the food and doing all the things. And certainly if other people are coming around, you know, timing everything. But there you took the time to actually stop and do an activity. It was obviously built in. And I think that that's really, really nice to remember to do an activity with the children that they can remember and they can do each year.
Yeah, she's really good like that. She's had a few traditions for every holiday and season, and you know, to the point that when we started getting into our teen years, we were mumbling and grumbling, and we didn't want to participate anymore. But you know, we really appreciate it now that we're older.
Yes, and then you can pass it on to your own children. Yay! Yeah. Oh, cool. What type of things do you do in your TV-free home? Now I mentioned that in the very beginning when I introduced you, that you transitioned to a TV-free home. And people often have an impression of people who have no TVs in their home and wonder what they actually get up to. That's what they'd probably really like to ask you. So yeah. I thought that it would be nice if you could share, what type of things do you do in your TV-free home?
Yeah, it's such a big question, and it's so funny because, I mean, first of all, we do technically have a TV because my husband could not live without his Australian football. Uh-huh. Which this season, I think there's two more weekends and then it's over. I'm so glad. But that's on the weekend in the evening, so we don't watch it, or he doesn't watch it around the kids. When my son was born, I kind of just fell into what everyone else does and kind of put the TV on here and there when he was, I don't know, maybe even, it seems so bizarre to me now, but around 18 months, and then for maybe only 3 or 4 months. And I just noticed that I kind of felt this pang of guilt whenever he was in front of the TV, because he was just so mesmerized, like he was hypnotized.
Yes.
And he was such an active kid. And then as soon as the screen went on, he was just so abnormally still. So I think I just said, that's it. And I am definitely one of those people that's all or nothing, more because I don't have enough willpower to kind of just moderate and, you know, let's say only do half an hour a day or something like that. I think if the temptation's just completely out of my mind, then it's just not an option. And that's just easier for me. And that's why we are completely TV free with the kids, as opposed to, you know, maybe just very moderately letting them watch here and there.
Right.
As well, I just think my kids right now are very young. They're 5 and 3, and then I have a baby. And I just think a lot of the images on TV now are quite mature. I'd be really open to maybe when my son's 7-ish, watching, you know, having a movie night once a week or something like that. But anyway, to your question, what we do, we just, I mean, it's so normal to me now that I don't think of it as like, oh, I've got to kill more time instead of watching TV, which really was how I was with just one child. When I first cut out TV, I was constantly, I had that itch like, oh, he's being so loud right now. He's tired. He's whiny. I just want to turn the TV on for half an hour. And I kind of pushed through that for, it took me like a good year to really kind of get through that itch and that feeling in my head, like the TV was an option. And now I don't think about it at all. And we just kind of go about our days. My kids wake up at the crack of dawn at about 5:30 or 5:45 since North was born, essentially.
Okay.
And they get up and usually play, do puzzles. North usually likes to have some kind of one-man band at that time, but we're getting used to blocking it out. And they kind of just play on their own, and my husband and I can stay in bed until for 45 minutes, a good 45 minutes to an hour after they've been up wandering around.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're up, I mean, right after breakfast, sometimes before, they're out in the backyard. And I think that's also just one of the beautiful things about living in Australia. Even in the winter, they just need, you know, an extra couple layers, and they can be outside for hours upon hours, and they're never getting very cold. Mm. So they're outside in our backyard just probably for half the day if they're not at school or doing an activity or something like that.
Right.
We do a lot of cooking together. I kind of start doing the daily chores, you know, cleaning and putting a load of laundry on and cooking. And sometimes they come and join me with the cooking. We do gardening together a lot in the backyard. And, you know, they just really like meaningful work. So they like to play. But then if they're getting bored or, you know, kind of hanging about, then I'll try and find some kind of a job for them that is meaningful, that is real work, whether it's peeling carrots or potatoes, or it's, you know, weeding a really small patch in the garden, or, you know, anything that makes or folding. My daughter at the moment loves folding napkins because they're obviously a bit easy. They're squares.
Yeah.
When I'm folding the laundry, I make sure I put all the napkins aside for her, and she'll wander over at some point and start folding them. Yeah, so we just kind of go about doing the usual things that you kind of do at home. And then at quiet time, if I do need a moment to myself, and, you know, my daughter's sleeping and the baby's sleeping and I'd like a rest, or I'd like to do something on my own, you know, sometimes I have my son listen to an oral story. I don't know if you've heard of Sparkle Stories.
Yes, brilliant, yes.
But I absolutely love them. We haven't been listening to them a lot lately because my son's just kind of that much more mature now. He entertains himself most of the time. But when he was about 3.5, 4, and he was starting to cut his naps, and I knew that he really did need to have a quiet time for a good 40 minutes to an hour, then we often listen to a couple Sparkle Stories at that time. And then we do some crafting and painting and stuff like that. But I have a 15-week-old baby at the moment, and so everything is just as simple as I can make it. And I'm just, you know, kind of going day by day. I don't have extravagant plans every single day and, you know, lots of activities and everything like that. It's really a lot of outdoor play and whatever we have on hand to entertain them.
So did you have to set up some of these activities and ideas with your little ones to go along? Because, you know, lots of people use TV as a way to structure their day. So when the children need downtime, they use a screen to do something because they need to do something else. And so when they go outside and play, did you set it up in a way that your outside area, for example, that the children can just go out and do anything and you had to help them to get started? Or is it just that they've kind of found their own way? I don't know if I'm explaining it really clearly, but.
No. When we just moved into this house just under a year ago, and when we first moved in, after about 2 weeks, I said to my husband, "We need a sand pit." Like what do you call it? And I'm not sure what you call it.
Yeah, sand pit would work. Yeah. Sand pit.
Yeah. but my daughter was digging up all the garden, which was okay. And I know they like playing with mud, and it's good for them. But I also, you know, wanted a little bit of my garden, and so we did dig out a pretty big sand pit for them, and that they spend a lot of time there. We have a little swing that we got recently that hangs on a little tree in the backyard. We were very lucky, and we inherited a trampoline from friends that it didn't fit in their new backyard anymore. So that burns off a lot of energy. And then we have a little bit of driveway in the backyard so they can do sidewalk chalk. But mostly and I let them, I think not having the TV as a control mechanism where they're wrangled in, you know, they have to sit still and they have to be quiet. Yeah. I think it makes you relax a little bit.
Okay.
Because you just have to relax. You know, there is going to be a muddy mess. My kids come in at least 20 times a day with sand all over them and, you know, muddy hands. And Indigo, my daughter, for some reason does not like using the hose to wash herself off. So she insists on coming, trekking through the entire house and going to the bathroom and climbing up and turning on the tap and washing her hands like that. And, you know, I am actually a total neat freak and I need my house in proper order. So I am always running after them and cleaning up little messes here and there, but that's kind of the trade-off. It really can be peaceful and quiet, and you can get a lot done when they are so engaged in their play, and they are going to get really messy and muddy, but it's worth it.
Good. Well, when I was looking at your blog, I saw that you made a simple cake that children can make, and I would love it if you could share some of that recipe with us today, because there are lots of us that have young children and want to do activities with them in the kitchen, and yet it's a bit nerve-wracking knowing what you can do. And so if you could share that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I should have looked up the name of the book, because I was inspired by it's why French children don't something, or
yes. It was really popular.
It was a really popular book, and I read it right before I had the baby. And it's about essentially kind of an observation on raising children in France. It's very generalized, but in the book they had an example of how French children kind of will do their baking all by themselves. And I had always done baking and cooking with my kids and involved them in it. But because they can't read, I couldn't exactly put them to work at a recipe. So I was inspired kind of by a chapter in that book, and I drew a recipe for my son. And so the recipe is as follows, but you'll have to kind of draw each set of ingredients and then explain them to your child. I think probably from 4 up, they could really kind of look at the recipe and be able to follow it. And it's 2 cups of milk or yogurt and 2 eggs and 2 cups of sugar. We usually use like rapadura or brown, which is, they're both just kind of less refined sugars. And then 3/4 cup of an oil of your choice, so coconut oil or even melted butter, something like that, and 1 teaspoon of vanilla. And I put all of those ingredients together in little pictures. And then I kind of had a big arrow pointing towards a big bowl. So
okay,
essentially what I was saying to him is put all these wet ingredients into a bowl and then stir them. And then the other ingredients were our 4 cups of flour. We use spelt flour, but I'm sure you could use any flour. And just 2 teaspoons of bicarb, which is, do you call it bicarb in
the
UK?
Yes, yeah, so bicarbonate of soda, yes.
Yes. I get confused with my words. And then there's another picture of a bowl, and then you pour them together. And then I prepare a lot for him. I get out the cups and the bowls for him, and I grease and line the cake tin so he doesn't have to worry too much about that, and kind of just make it as neat and presentable and simple for him as possible. And then I kind of just leave him to it, and they really rise to the occasion. And you can add berries to the top of it, or chocolate chips, or you know, anything that you like. And it's just like a really beautiful, simple, light cake. And they take such pride in it and obviously love the end result.
Oh, it's brilliant, because I saw the pictures of it. And if you want to see it, it's at thiswholefamily.com, and it's under A Simple Cake That Children Can Make. And I'll leave a link for that in the show notes so that you can see. But the pictures are just amazing. And I thought, wouldn't it be fabulous to be able to let go of the cooking and let the children really try it and do it. And so yeah, I'm really inspired to try it. We cook a lot with the kids at home and want them to be involved, but baking still is one of those things that I'm a little nervous with doing. So you've given me a real push, and that story that you gave was just really good about getting kids to do it by themselves.
They love it. And obviously I'm helping a little bit with the oven, mm-hmm. but this cake is really quite, you can't mess it up. It's so simple, and it doesn't really matter if it's lumpy or anything like that. So it's a really good starter for them.
No, it looks really soft as well. I can imagine that was going to be a pudding staple soon. Once the kids learn how to do that, they'll be knocking that out all the time.
Yeah.
So we've talked a little bit about traditions that you have in your family in the spring, because you're in the spring season now in Australia, and the autumn and the fall, because that's the Northern Hemisphere, that's what we're in at the moment. And you've given us lots of ideas about that. You talked a little bit about your journey of TV-free, journey that you've been taking, and that's been good. And I wanted to move on a little bit now to, how do you decide on your rhythms that you follow in your home? Because after all, your work is called Whole Family Rhythms, and this whole family. So
they're very kind of nature based and artistically inspired rhythms, essentially it kind of comes from my need for a little bit of control and, you know, my adult understanding of the world. I always wanted to put things into charts and, you know, have everything timed out into a routine. But at the same time, it has to be really flexible with kids. They teach you that very quickly, that nothing is constant, and you have to always be compromising. And yeah, our rhythm is constantly evolving and changing based on the kids' needs and also my needs. And there's a theme for each day, so that it does give them an idea. I mean, they're quite young, so they don't really understand the days of the week and time in general and how it all works. So having a day like a baking day, a painting day, a coloring day, it kind of just gives them this little sense of understanding, okay, that's what we're doing today. That's kind of going to be a little bit of the focus. And it is just a small focus. It's only, you know, 45 minutes maximum that we're doing that activity all together. And the rest of the time, they're mostly playing outside or playing quietly inside, or, you know, doing things on their own. the one thing that I do pay attention to in our rhythm and in the rhythms in whole family rhythm guides is in-breaths and out-breaths. And that's kind of a Waldorf thing, an in-breath. So kids kind of need to go from in-breaths, which is, inward time, that's quiet time, focused time. It would be like stories, artwork, reading books, just, quiet time. And then out-breath, which is outside and maybe being loud and using their whole body and digging and building and things like that. So I do try and have the rhythm go in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, so on and so forth throughout the day. And then it kind of just depends on what my kids are needing at the moment, what I need. I mean, right now, because we have this small baby, our rhythm is as simple as can be. And we do a little bit of artwork during the day. And we do a story, maybe like I'll tell an oral story at night when they're already tucked into their bed and I'll tell it to them. But I'm not doing kind of stories with props or anything. Like in the Whole Family Rhythms Guide, there is a story often with props that you can tell every week, a different story for every week. There's different finger plays for every week. And they're all kind of based on the seasons and they're beautiful, but at the moment in my family, because we do have this young child, I'm just trying to keep things as simple as possible. And that's really what creating your own family rhythm is about. It's not to get these guides and these rhythms and stick by them no matter what. It's really about kind of using them as inspiration and finding your own rhythm with them.
No, I completely agree. I think that's one of the hardest things is as soon as you have a young baby, you have to dance to so many different tunes. And then you've got other children. It's constantly a juggling act, and that you can feel really quite despondent, I think, as a parent trying to juggle everything. But rhythms can flow in so many different ways that you've just shared. And so that's really cool to think about it that way, that you don't have to be stuck doing things one way just because you have it written down that way. You can kind of go off piece and do something a little different.
When I do feel stuck, that's when I usually start looking at our rhythm and changing it up. When I've kind of completely fallen out of our rhythm and I haven't been following it, then I know that I am in a stuck place and that I should probably look at it and simplify things and change things around. Last school term, I think I had I had some kind of very exciting activity to do after school with my son, and I kind of realized quickly that he was so tired after school that we couldn't really do a lot, and I kind of changed some of our rhythm and drawing stuff like that, either during the day when he was at school and just doing it with my daughter, or else doing it in the morning or on the weekend and just cutting it out of after school altogether. And that's the thing, you just have to pay attention to what your children do want and need and what they're looking for, and kind of set things up like according to that.
It's difficult, isn't it, to get it right. But I was going to ask you a question about the rhythms. Do you write your rhythms down and reflect on what you're going to do after the rhythm has happened? Because, there's many ways that you can do it, I'm guessing. So what would be how you do it? Do you prepare in advance ideas and have them at the back of your mind, or do you just kind of have an overview?
We have, I have a chart with our rhythm that maybe lasts 1 month to 4 months. But then I also have kind of weekly plans. And usually on a Sunday, I'll plan out the week. And that's everything from what we're going to have for dinner, to what kind of craft we might do, and what stories we might tell. And then we also have our daily rhythm, which has been, a lot of it has been the same since the kids were teeny tiny, things like story and brushing teeth and bedtime and blessings and kind of breakfast and lunch and dinner are always kind of at the same time. So some of it's set in stone and some of it changes a lot. And I do a lot of preparations on Sundays and then, you know, usually kind of seasonally and sometimes once or twice a season, depending on what they need.
And how do you share that with your husband?
Yeah, I guess that is a common question too. I think our rhythm on the weekends when my husband is there is a lot more flexible. My husband works intense hours, so he leaves the house quite early, although he's completely in charge of the breakfast routine, which is nice for me, and he has been for a long time, so he makes the breakfast and kind of sits with the kids while I have a shower and feed the baby and stuff like that. But then he's gone. He's not usually home for dinner. And then he also works on Sundays. So Saturday is what we call our family day, or we call it our data day. And that definitely is kind of more open for interpretation. And we leave that to be a bit more spontaneous. We do often go on bushwalks or go, you know, drive an hour somewhere to a beach and do special things like that. And then, you know, sometimes our rhythm is thrown a little bit or the kids go to bed a bit later. But yeah, I kind of hold the fort with the rhythm the rest of the week because I'm the one in the fort.
Yes, I completely understand. No, it's interesting just to share the different ways that we do rhythm. And it's really inspiring, I think, for others that are trying to work rhythm into their own families at this time to just hear how other people do it. Because it's not the general type of conversation that you have at the school gate or with your friends to know how other people sort this out. And we've usually got somebody around, whether it's a partner or friends or people that look after our children, and it's we can do it ourselves, but it's sharing this same journey with another person, whether it's a provider or a partner or a husband or whatever, that can be sometimes the tricky rub getting that right.
Yeah I do a lot of preparing. I don't do a lot, well, any kind of real things for myself during the day. Like, I'm not really on the computer during the day unless maybe everybody's asleep or North's occupied and the other girls are asleep. And I, in the evenings, I think about where my triggers are. Like, when I start to feel stressed out in the day, it would be something like it's the morning and everybody's still in their pajamas and there's no snacks or food packed and we have to get out of the house, something like that. So in the evening, I think, how can I minimize my stress and, you know, make the rhythm go as smoothly as possible? And for me, that's packing lunches and snacks the night before and having them all lined up in the fridge. And even to the extent that when the baby was brand new and I knew we had to do the school run, you know, laying out the kids' outfits the night before beside their bed so that all they had to do was kind of roll out of bed and get dressed. You know, just all those little things so that the rhythm, I don't know, you feel more comfortable with the rhythm and it will go more smoothly the next day when you have all those little preparations in place.
Yeah. So you've mentioned it briefly, but could you go into a little bit more detail about whole family rhythms and what would you find?
Yeah, so Whole Family Rhythms was kind of born of, yeah, me making these seasonal charts for myself and my kids, trying to constantly establish and figure out what our family rhythm was. And I kind of just knew there was a bit of a demand for people to see what other people do and then to create something of their own based on that. You know, I was always scouring the internet for, you know, routines for this age to that age and, you know, activities for this age to that age. And you kind of see all these beautiful Waldorf blogs or nature-based blogs with activities that they do with their kids. But then you wonder how you're going to kind of fit it in to our very busy lives and schedules. And so, yeah, I was always doing a lot of personal planning. And then I had been thinking about it for quite a while because with my blog, I mean, I share a lot of that already on my blog, but I've kind of put it all together in one big package. So I've now published, I started in January and I published in January, it was summer. So I started working on them in January and then I published my first, which was autumn. So I've done autumn, winter and spring, and I'm still working on summer and hopefully I'll have it out. December 1st is the official first day of summer in Australia. And essentially they're guides. They have caregivers meditations for every single week for the season, or you can buy a month or else you can buy 3 months, an entire season. They have a story every week for the kids. They have watercolor painting and beeswax modeling, or if you have much younger kids, then you could do salt dough modeling. There's a weekly finger game or finger play. There's a weekly baking or cooking recipe. There's coloring. So each day of the week, there's a different activity, and it's really very seasonally based. So the spring guide has, planting sprouts and setting out little pieces of yarn for the birds to collect for their nests and what other kinds of things. All the colors in the spring guide are kind of green and pink and purple. Mm-hmm. So everything's very seasonally based. Yeah, and it's just kind of a way, you don't have to, you could follow them by the book and really kind of lay out your week, and it's all right there and it's all planned for you, like a lesson plan, like a teacher's lesson plan. Mm-hmm. Or you can just pick and choose what you'd like to use based on your family's ages and needs and how much you want to get into it or how little you want to do.
And so where would be the best place to go to be able to get that?
It's wholefamilyrhythms.com.
Okay, super.
And there's lots of samples there too, so you can really kind of get an idea of what you're looking at.
Oh, cool. Well, that sounds really exciting. So I want to ask now more about how you have managed to find this way of parenting, because we all have our own parenting styles and it takes a little while to kind of ease into our own little comfy slippers about it. So I'm just curious to how you found your feet as a mother exploring and establishing your family way.
Yeah, it's been 5 years. My son just turned five, so 5 years. And I was always a bit more alternative and earthy and a bit more alternative, but I really started to research and look at different types of education for him, and I just stumbled across Waldorf education. It just really resonated with me. It's all about educating the whole child, the head, heart, and hands. It's so nature-based, and that really resonated with me because a lot of my childhood was spent kind of at this family cottage near a lake, surrounded by trees and forests. And I really felt in my heart how nourishing it was for me. And so, yeah, I don't even know how to address the question. I'm still learning every day and mm-hmm. on this journey of motherhood, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly what kind of mother I am. And, you know, I think we're always revisiting our family values, trying to really identify what they are. And I think that's kind of just life in general as a person. You're always looking at what your values are and what your strong beliefs are, and yeah, and bringing those into your family culture. And that's kind of what my goal is to really look at what my values as a human being are and try to teach those or model those for my children.
Mm-hmm. It sounds as if you were really open to different ideas, and once you were looking, and once you saw something that you liked, namely Waldorf in this case, that you then explored it in more detail and then tried to apply it to your family situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Yeah, it just really resonated with me. And then once we started going to a Waldorf play group when North was maybe two. And then I met, you know, just a parents that very like-minded parents. You know, I wasn't the only one all of a sudden with a child in cloth nappies. And, you know, there were other families that were also TV free, or they didn't, you know, their kids didn't watch a lot of media. And I think that really supports us too, and helps me to feel a mothering identity, because often the way that I do parent is not mainstream, and it can feel kind of isolating. But I think finding a community with similar values was important too.
Yeah, and I guess apart from your TV-free home where you had all or nothing, there is the ability to slide, and a sliding scale, and choose which things that you want to do with your family. So you decided that you didn't want TV and be a TV-free home, and then that was it. But you can also reduce what you're doing to, you know, more acceptable levels for your new level, and then keep going until you get to nothing as well. So there's just ways of doing it, isn't there?
I mean, TV was one of those all or nothings, but there's so many things that our family does, little changes that we've been making. And they're very little, you know, like I do use cloth nappies, but at the same time, I don't beat myself up if, you know, we're going out and I grab a disposable, or my kids always wear, I only have one in nappies now, thank goodness, but wear disposables to bed, because I feel like guilty that they're wearing cloth ones and that they're going to feel wet at night. Mm-hmm. You know, there's always a compromise. And even with TV, we are an international family and we travel back and forth, and they can watch any kids show on the airplane, and they know that, and they absolutely love it. And, you know, anything goes on the airplane.
Yes.
Lollipops, anything, as long as they're quiet. you know, and even recently, my husband and I were so sick with the flu. We've never been so sick for 6 days. Mm-hmm. And we don't have any family in Sydney, and you can't really ask friends to come over and help take care of your kids when the whole family's sick. So we did actually end up having the kids watch a few videos, which we had never done before. But yeah, there's definitely always a compromise and, you know, a happy medium. And as I have, if you really looked at my blog from when I started about 4 years ago to now, you can see my journey and how I tend to extremes, but how I've definitely relaxed a lot. And I can see that it's not always black and white, and there's always kind of a gray ground that is, it's the journey.
Yes, you're so right. And I'm really glad that you could share that part with us, because I think that it can be hard when we're trying to make changes, and the struggle of changing from where we are to changing to what we want to be can be really disheartening to ourselves. We can feel really down and low, and we tend to almost beat up ourselves with that we're not doing so good, and we're doing everything badly, and we're not, but we are struggling, and a struggle is good. We're trying to find our right balance right now for our family, and that's you've shared that really well.
I used to do a lot of yoga, and I don't do nearly as much as I'd like to now, but I did a great big master class a couple of years ago. And they said during the practice, one of the gurus, the teacher said, you know, just really know in your heart that you are doing absolutely everything that you can do, the best that you can do in this moment, based on everything you've been given up until this moment. And I do really believe that, you know, we are trying to do our very best based on everything that we've given and our whole life experience, and that we're always trying to do better. So that's, you know, that we should be proud of that and satisfied with that.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, I ask guests these three questions to get to know them a little bit more. And so I thought that we would start with, what two actions have you taken in the last 2 years that have had a positive effect on your life, would you say?
Yeah, I didn't give this question much thought, but the first two things that kind of came to my mind was I did do a weekend yoga retreat when my daughter was, I had just weaned her, so she was almost two. And that was just, it was so nice to have 2 days of space to myself, because before that I hadn't even spent a night away from my son, my older son. So just really having that space and doing something that I loved before I even had kids and I still love, and just really giving myself something back. That was amazing. I think it was about almost 2 years ago, we switched from being a vegetarian family, or we ate what we were technically pescatarian, eating a little bit of fish, to eating animal products. And that, I think it was positive in the sense that it was a real kind of identity crisis for me, and it was a big thing, and it's just made me much more of a kind of open, humbled person, and I feel a lot less judgmental about everything in life, because I was so really caught up in my vegetarian opinions and beliefs, and then to switch that whole philosophy was just very kind of humbling. So I think it was good for me.
Oh, that's good. And so what were you doing in the year 2000?
In the year 2000?
Yeah, cool. 13 years ago.
Oh, yeah. No, that makes sense. Because I wrote, I was 18 and I was on my way to university. But yeah, I graduated from high school in 2000, in June 2000. And so then in September 2000, I headed to McGill University, and I was just studying a general arts, and I ended up deciding to study international development and philosophy and world religions, which is a bit far from where I am now, but at the same time, it really did shape who I am and a lot of what I'm interested in.
Oh, that's really cool. I love asking that question, because everybody's in such different places from where they are, but it usually links back to where, you know, that's been the root of where they are now. So it's really cool. I love hearing that, the answer to that one. And so the last one is, what's the favorite play activity you would say is in the house for your, let's go with three little ones. I don't know whether your 3 months old does much playing yet. But
well, my son at the moment, he was given a beautiful from his grandfather, a wooden workbench, where he actually has like a real little saw and, you know, some sanding and nails and a hammer, and he can create whatever he likes. So he's out there at the crack of dawn, much to my hammering away. And he loves that. My daughter is really into taking all of her real clothes, not her costumes, out of the drawer and trying them on, you know, 6 to 8 times a day, and taking them off and leaving them all in a pile on her floor. That's kind of what she's into right now. She says she's a fairy.
Okay.
No matter what she's putting on. And together they play a lot of kind of imaginary stuff, like doggies and a little bit of mamas and daddas, and they do a lot of building, and in the sand pit they do a lot of cooking and baking together, and they set up shops. They do a lot of that. And my baby just is really into, I'm still trying to convince her to give me her first little laugh. She's done a couple giggles the past few days, but she just likes kicking and cooing and looking at her mama's face, and and that's about it right now. We don't even, I mean, I was, you know, with your first child, you get all the toys and everything, and she doesn't even really have a toy yet. She has a little doll that makes a bit of a rattling noise, but she hasn't 100% figured out how to use her hands yet. So it's not really any toys yet.
Oh, that's really cool. Well, can you just tell us where we can find you online?
Sure. So you can find me at thiswholefamily.com. That's the blog. And wholefamilyrhythms.com is the place where you can buy the seasonal guides. And on Facebook, it's facebook.com/wholefamilyrhythms. And you can also find me on Pinterest, which is Pinterest/thiswholefamily. I know it's a bit confusing.
That's okay. No, it's great to be able to connect you to all these different places, because there'll be different things that we'll find there. I know I love looking at the boards that you pin, the pins that you pin on the boards that you have on Pinterest, because they just give such inspiration and ideas to follow through with. So yeah. I'm glad that you could share that one with us. Well, it's been super duper talking to you today, all about family rhythms, family traditions that we can do, and you sharing a bit of your journey, your parenting journey with us. I really do appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, Melissa.
I'll be right back after this short break. I'm glad that Megan and I got to finish our conversation, as we had a few gremlins on the line, as you might have heard through the interview. I love the topsy-turvy nature of seasons with our hemispheres, and I hope you enjoyed that interview with Megan as she shared a bit of her parenting journey as well. If, as you are listening, you're thinking of a friend or a family member who might like this show, then send them a link to raisingplayfultots.com/147. The Raising Playful Tots note is our very own newsletter, and it goes out on a Friday and a Saturday. And you can sign up to that at raisingplayfultots.com/parents. Thank you for downloading and listening to the show this week. It's always good to hear from you guys and what's going on with your little ones. For links from the interview to find Megan, don't worry if you're working out or if you're driving, nip on over to the show notes when you can at raisingplayfultots.com/146. I hope today you're feeling inspired to try something new and to continue to keep trying again and again. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 146. Come over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn, and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!